everybody, welcome to The Bloodlust, your go-to podcast for classy broads and a token dude talking horror. My name is Amy and I'm your fearless leader. This is the second episode of Our Log Does Not Judge, covering parts 3 and 4 of Twin Peaks The Return, aka the third season, aka David Lynch's triumphant return. Joining me for this, like last time, my good buddy Sandra. Hello, friend.
Hello, friend.
How excited are you for tonight's episode?
Oh my gosh, I'm getting ready. I'm getting nervous that it'll be the one where it all falls apart, where the shark has jumped. But I'm like, no, just trust the process. Just go with the flow.
Put your faith in him.
But yeah, put my faith in Mr. Lynch.
In him with a capital H.
Yes.
It's airing tonight. We are recording this on June 4th, where part 5 is going to air just a few short hours from now.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get this out probably a little bit into the following week, so hopefully you will get to hear it very soon.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but so this means we're not going to have any more of those digital sort of episodes, right? Like it's just going to be every week now?
Yes.
Okay.
As far as I know, they're going to be one a week until September now.
Okay. That's good. You know, I'll savor it.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. Like we talked about last time, it's kind of nice to have that experience back.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also, it makes it a little easier to put these recaps out. Am I right?
You're right. Not going to lie. It does.
It's going to be. Plus, the nice thing, too, is, you listeners, if you hung in there with us through the whole last recap, you'll know that it was pretty long, and we did our best, but it still was long, because we went through 2 episodes worth, and we're going to do that again on this one, to cover 3 and 4, but after this, it'll just be 1 episode at a time.
You just get a little mini bonus log.
That's right. Our log will have shorter messages for you. In the future. And before we get into parts 3 and 4, I kind of wanted to bring up something that I was thinking about recently, and that is, you know, we're a horror podcast. We talk mostly about horror movies, but we also talk about TV. We did American Horror Story recaps in the past. Why are we talking about a David Lynch show, something that's not really categorized as horror, on this show?
Why indeed?
You know? So I figured I should address that. And I guess for my part, I connect David Lynch with horror big time, because while his stuff isn't explicitly horror, there are moments in his movies that are scarier than just about anything I've seen in a traditional horror movie. What do you think?
Oh, God, yes. I mean, horror to me, I think I'm one of those people where a lot of movies to me, a lot of TV shows can fall into a horror category, because it's either kind of horrible things happening to people. It's watching something that fills you with suspense, with mystery, with dread. Like, you know, for me, I think of Black Swan. I've let that fall into horror movie for me. I thought Gravity, that Sandra Bullock movie. I mean, it doesn't get much more horrifying, in my opinion, than being floating lost out in space. Like,
yeah, for real. Those are really good points. Those are definitely intense, horrific movies.
Right. And people like to say, and I don't totally disagree, but like, oh, no, this is a thriller. You know, David Lynch, that's a thriller, whatever. But it's like, well, what's the difference? You're feeling thrilled? You're feeling scared? Like, just, you know, why do we have to be so tight with our labels?
Right. I guess it's the same thing as anything you try and categorize into genres, you know, getting angry with, you know, like I used to when I was a kid, like, oh, you like alternative music. What does that even mean, you know?
Absolutely.
I guess it's the same thing.
Yeah,
and
it
you
does.
Think, you know, maybe, well, there's sort of supernatural or paranormal aspects to this, so maybe that makes it more horror. But at the same time, there ain't nothing paranormal about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and you don't get more horror than that. So that doesn't really signify horror, necessarily. Psycho, it's just a person, you know.
Mother.
Yeah.
No, I totally agree. X-Files, too. I'm hugely obsessed with the X-Files. And I feel like watching the X-Files as a kid was one of the things that shaped me into a horror fan, you know?
Oh, yeah, man. How about the guy that comes out of the he comes out of the escalator. The guy, Tombs, was that Tombs, his name?
Yes. Oh, my God.
He makes a wasp nest of, like, and he, what does he eat? People's livers? Eat people's hearts?
He's eaten some internal organ. I think, I want to say a liver.
Yeah, that was creepy. And the sewer monster with the weird mouth and stuff.
Oh, my God. And, of course, Home, that controversial episode of absolutely, like, I think Fox could only air that once.
And I don't think that would have ever happened had it not been for Twin Peaks.
Oh, absolutely not. And that's, you know, everybody knows that The X-Files was hugely inspired by Twin Peaks. It's a big deal. It was a big cultural thing.
Yeah, for sure. And there were lots of nods to Twin Peaks in The X-Files, obviously. Mm-hmm. Scully's dad is Major Briggs.
How crazy is that? It's just funny.
It's amazing. And even more, obviously, David Duchovny. That's nice. How I first learned about, I mean, I guess when I watched it the first time, I didn't know who David Duchovny was, you right. know? And then I started watching X-Files, and I remembered. It's so weird. You know, that guy looks awfully familiar to me, but it wasn't until, you know, the Entertainment Weekly stuff started coming out where they would point that stuff out mm-hmm. that I realized that that was Denise.
Oh, Denise. We're going to talk about her.
Yes, we are. So, listeners, you may have a different opinion than we do. You might not think David Lynch is horror. Mm-hmm. But I tell you what, man. We talked about the scene with the man behind the dumpster at Winkies last week. That scared the shit out of me.
God.
It still does.
Ugh.
The whole idea of it, and so many others, I feel like Inland Empire is really scary.
I'll admit I haven't seen that. I'm sorry, I haven't. Forgive me, for I've sinned.
Our log does not judge, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
This is a judgment-free zone.
Right.
Inland Empire is a big commitment, too. It's a long movie, and it's very hard to put together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you might have seen, like, the rabbits parts, where it's like a weird sitcom of people with rabbit heads. There's whole segments of that with inappropriate laugh tracks and just these people with rabbit heads.
Right.
It's a whole part of the movie. You know, it's hard to sit through and hard to make sense of, but damn, it feels like an acid trip. Or it's full of dream logic. You know how there's mm-hmm. bits of his other movies and lots of bits of Twin Peaks that follow kind of dream logic or dream, they seem to be in a dream space.
Very powerful stuff. I like that stuff.
Yeah. Inland Empire is all that.
Okay.
It's the closest, I think, to creating a movie that's just a dream.
Mm.
So, you know, that comes with a lot of challenges to the viewer, but I find it really scary. And, you know, maybe you guys at home do not agree with me, but that's the nice thing about media and entertainment. Everyone can have their own opinion. These genres are mm-hmm. not set in stone.
No, and I wouldn't want them to be.
Nah, I agree.
Well, it's like we talked about very briefly last time, because I said it traumatized me, but it's Blue Velvet.
Oh, yeah.
And I've only seen it once, and it was when I was in high school. And I, you know, it's, oh, my God. Just thinking about that movie makes me, like, hella uncomfortable and, you know, the best way. And I told my husband, Scott, I was like, oh, my God, Amy's going to make me watch that again because it's been too long and I brought it up. I was like, she's going to make me watch it.
I might. I mean, you probably would get a lot more out of it now, especially being a fan of his.
I know, but I'm nervous.
I understand, man.
Frank scares me. Time.
It's Frank, then.
Yeah, it's all Frank.
Yeah. I can't think of a scarier bad guy. A more volatile, just creepy, you would be afraid to even breathe around him. I can't think of anybody better.
No. No. Because he's too real.
Yeah. He's that kind of just a little further than people that you've already met, you know, the way that, like, Walter Sobchak is perfect in The Big Lebowski because he's like that asshole, you know, but just a little further out, you know.
God, I love Walter.
I do too.
But no, it's true. And same thing, and I can't remember the character's name, but Cape Fear, you know, that's a scary dude that De Niro plays in the remake. Like,
yeah.
Same kind of deal.
Oh, yeah. He's great in that.
Mm-hmm.
And so hunky. I was not ready for that.
Not ready for it. Get ready, world. He's hunky in Godfather 2 as well.
Oh, my God. He's so hunky in Godfather 2.
Raging Bull, Taxi Driver.
He's a little creepy in those, but...
Yeah. That's how I like him.
That says a lot about you, Sandra.
Oh, actually, speaking of that, I need to make an apology.
For what?
Well, I remember last time I said my spouse, I was like, he's not as into Twin Peaks. So he has gotten so into Twin Peaks. And he's really? Like, no, I really, really like it. And he's just enjoying the hell out of the new season. So, I mean, he's fully indoctrinated. He is one of us. Gooble gobble.
Oh, good. Finally, you
we
got
accept him.
Him.
Yeah.
We accept him. Gooble gobble. One of us.
Yeah. Anyway, that was all.
I'm very pleased to hear that, Sandra. And you tell him, welcome.
Yeah, well, that's what we do on this show. We're conscripting for the Church of Twin Peaks.
That's right. All are welcome, children. Gather round while we give you the good news.
All faiths welcome.
Mm-hmm. Punch and pie. Coffee and pie, actually.
Or donuts, since I'm not a huge fan of pie. I know that's controversial, but I don't like pie.
You go ahead. That's your right as an American, goddammit.
That's right. The log. Not judging. But I do enjoy the donuts, and I had so many donuts today in preparation for this to get in the mood.
Excellent. And I've got my lovely cup of hot 100% Kona coffee.
Ooh.
Black as midnight on a moonless night. Fresh ground.
Beautiful. I had iced coffee today because it's hot in California.
Who can blame you?
Yeah.
I'm sweating bullets up here, so I probably should have done the same thing.
You know what I had in my iced coffee? I think you might like this. If you're a cocktail guy like myself, my friend made us some coffee with non-dairy creamer and a little cinnamon sugar vodka over ice. Didn't suck.
Oh, shoot.
Mm-hmm. So I'm like fully, like I'm feeling my Agent Cooper vibes. Coffee and donuts.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
You're in the perfect state to discuss part three, which gets real nuts.
Oh my God, does it ever. We could almost do an entire episode, like 3 hours long on this episode, because it's so much.
Yeah, and it's so abstract.
Yeah.
So let's try to make sense of it for these nice people.
I did watch this one twice. I almost wish I'd watched it three times. Watched it thrice, you could say, because I got so much more out of it the second time.
Yeah, man. I did notice something. That pin must be an FBI thing.
That's
because
yeah.
I noticed. Oh, did you notice it too?
I did. And I was like, oh yeah, Amy and I are trying to figure out what that pin is. And Scott was like, it's just an FBI pin. I'm like, oh, shut up. We wanted it to be a thing.
Yeah, party pooper.
I know. Well, it's okay.
We still have the blue rose.
Oh, blue rose.
Ah. We're about to get to that.
Mm-hmm.
Here's how part three starts. Remember how Cooper was floating in space when we left him?
Mm-hmm.
Well, now he is still floating through space. It's all skittery and staticky and whatever. And he approaches what looks to be kind of a purple miasma of floating gas or something, like a planet, like the atmosphere of a planet, maybe.
Like a gas giant.
Could be. I don't know. Is that what it looked like to you?
Yeah, some sort of station or planet, I don't know.
Yeah, once he gets through that, he lands on it, and he's on like a little balcony of a building, and everything is purple. And the ocean is purple, the landscape is all purple, and there's no other ways in or out or anything except for this little door or a little window or whatever. And he goes through it into this building, and it's all red inside of there, and like a living room with a fireplace and stuff. And there's a woman, and she's sitting on the couch, and she either doesn't have eyes or there's some kind of like clay or something covering her eyes.
I called her in my notes the blinded woman.
I like that.
Like she'd had sight, but then, yeah, something deliberately happened to her eyes.
Like it, maybe that was scar tissue?
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought, and it's really scary.
Yeah, and everything is kind of like, it's like frames are missing, you know, even though obviously this was filmed on video.
Yeah.
That's something you guys might not know if you're a David Lynch fan, or if you are, you might actually know it already. He said he'd never work on film again. He said he'd only do video from here on out once he did Inland Empire. And as far as I know, he's not gone back from that.
There's something anyway. Really cool about that, but yeah, yeah.
I like the fact that he's willing to adapt, you know? He's not all stodgy and like, film's the best, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I like that about him. But it looks like frames are missing. Like, stuff is kind of skittery or, like, too fast.
Yeah.
And things will sort of jump back. The action will jump back. And so he's slowly kind of approaching this woman. And she kind of takes his hands. And he asks her where the hell they are. And since she's blind, she's feeling all over his face and his arms and stuff. But she is not, he can't understand her. And we can't understand her, and it's not subtitled. It's like a weird, how do you think you would describe the way she talks?
It's almost like it's either like sped up or slowed down, like backwards. It's like you can tell she's like saying words, but you can't comprehend what she's saying.
Yeah, it's almost like we can't hear her, like the connection is bad.
Yes, exactly. And it just, oh my gosh, it fits with her jerky movements. She's really unsettling. That was good stuff.
The whole scene is very creepy, especially how it looks.
Oh, yeah.
And he can't get very far with her as far as communicating because something starts pounding from the corner of the room. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't really tell if it was a door. They kept showing this one shot, and it had, like, some kind of reflective lights on it.
Yes.
Or something was reflecting. Was it a door? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if it was a door or it was a wall, but something's trying to get in.
Yeah. And she, the woman, the blinded woman, makes kind of the universal gesture of shush, you know, puts her fingers to her lips. And he's kind of worrying about the pounding and doesn't know what to do. Well, at the same time, his attention's drawn to the opposite corner of the room, and there's something built into the wall, and it looks like the back of an old TV, kind of. You know, there's little circuits and such, and there seems to be an outlet in the middle of it, or what looks sort of like an outlet, and it makes a electric buzzing sound, but honestly, what doesn't so far in this show?
Mm-hmm.
But he's kind of drawn to it, and he goes to investigate it more closely, and the woman kind of skitters over to him after a while, and she gives him the universal gesture of that thing is bad news, which is, you know, finger sawing across your neck motion. And it's great when she does it, because even though we can't hear what she's saying, when she does that, you hear like the movie knife sounds.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. And the machine has the number 15 in the center of it, which is a number we haven't seen before so far, and he wants to go to it, but she calls him through this different door all while the pounding is going on and up a ladder. And when they open the hatch, they're on top of the planet just floating in space, and the planet is just this gray box with what looks like, it sort of looks like a furnace or some kind of generator or something on the top. There are like dials on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like she's trying to explain it to him, what it is or what's going on, but we can't understand her, neither can he. And she pulls this lever on the side of the furnace, and it electrocutes her, and she falls off the planet. And she doesn't, like, float away like in Gravity. She just falls like there is gravity. Hey-o. So that was weird. And it's like, what are you going to do now?
Right.
It didn't seem like there was anybody else there. But the banging stops when she does that.
And it's like, what I was trying to figure out at that moment is, did she save him, really? Was she sacrificing herself for him? Why would she do that?
Way, right?
Yeah.
She almost seemed like she had a little bit of, like, melancholy in her face. I mean, obviously we couldn't see expressions in her eyes or anything, but there was this sad look on her face before she pulls the lever. It does seem like maybe she sacrificed herself for him, because we know something's trying to stop him.
Right.
Probably evil Coop.
Mm, evil bastard.
He goes down back into the planet, but before he does, Major Briggs's head floats by, just a little, like, superimposed Major Briggs head. Well, I guess a giant one compared to Coop.
True.
And he says, backwards, of course, Blue Rose. Now, do you guys remember what that means?
Tell us, Amy.
I will. We're not exactly sure. That's the short answer. But the long answer is there was stuff in Fire Walk with Me about the Blue Rose with, oh God, what was Kiefer Sutherland's character's name?
Let's just call him Kiefer.
Okay, that's fine. When he, before he goes to, before he disappears, and before we even meet Cooper, and they're trying to test him, the woman has a blue rose on her lapel, and they don't explain it then, but it's referenced later, and it seems to refer to special cases that Gordon Cole, the FBI director, gives to Cooper or his, like, important agents. Mm-hmm. And they have something to do with the unexplained, we think.
Kind of an X-file, perhaps?
Exactly.
All right, so by the way, that floating head is a little unsettling. It's kind of funny, but it's mostly unsettling.
I may have laughed a little bit, but yes, I love this whole sequence.
Rose. Coop decides to go back into the interior of the planet, back down the hatch, and there's a different woman there on the couch now. Ronette Polanski? Maybe?
I've heard it speculated that that's Ronette Polanski. I don't recognize her anymore.
No, I don't either. But so she looks back at him and then looks at her watch. The number on the machine now on the wall is down to 3. She tells him that when he gets there, he will already be there.
Which, what?
What?
I suppose we assume it's the doppelganger that she's talking about.
Right, you'll already be, like, to almost trying to warn him, like, don't be freaked out because you're going to see yourself. That's kind of what I got from it.
Right.
And did you notice there was blue roses on the table in that room?
Ooh, I didn't. Nice catch.
Thank you. And also, she is also in a red dress, like the first woman.
Right, but it's clearly a different woman because she has eyes.
Absolutely. She definitely has eyes, and she has a little sporty bob haircut. But, I don't know. There's something there. So we're in a slightly, you know, different room, but similarities, and the number has changed. Okay.
Almost seems like a countdown.
Doesn't it, though?
Mm-hmm.
So meanwhile, outside of this, Evil Coop is driving along, and he's, like, sweating. He looks ill. And he's checking his dash clock as his dash cigarette lighter starts to hum and light up. More of that electricity. Real right. Coop starts to get pulled into the outlet as he gets close to it. The, we'll call her Ronette, if it is Ronette, tells him to hurry. So he lets himself get sucked into the outlet horizontally, feet first. Also a little funny, totally bizarre looking. It's great.
Yeah, and his shoes pop off because they somehow can't make it through.
Yeah, it's almost like he's being raptured, but he does take all his clothes, just not his shoes.
Right. Can't bring your shoes, sorry.
I'm sorry, sir, but we're going to ask you. It's like when you go over to someone's house and they want you to take off their shoes.
It's just good manners.
It is just good manners. Okay, so there's that bizarre stuff going on.
Sure is.
So let's, I mean, just in case you're not confused enough, and in the best way when I say you're confused.
Of course.
Let's just jump somewhere else. So Evil Coop is driving so fast on this mountain road, and he's looking queasy. He's like, it's almost like he's running for something. He's kind of swerving all over the road. Let's see, he's in that town car. Remember, he got that Lincoln right. town car? Mm-hmm. So, of course, he crashes it instead of just pulling over. So he's definitely, like, running from something.
Right. And it's a pretty great crash, too.
Oh, it is. It's pretty, like, it's straight up, like, action movie crash. Mm-hmm. And he's not really hurt, but he looks like he's about to hurl. And you're like, oh, no. And he starts, like, covering his mouth. Like, you know, it's like, uh-oh, it's coming. It's coming. And he's over on that cigarette dash lighter. It's buzzing. Like it's, yeah. You know, it's like something's happening.
And it's turning green kind of around it.
Yes. And then you start to see those kind of mirage looking curtains of the lodge, the dark lodge, appearing and disappearing kind of.
Right. Which, as we know, is signaling that you can cross over.
Yeah. You can go.
That's what Hawk just saw.
That's in the last
episode.
That's absolutely right. Oh, so, okay. So remember when I said we're going to just make it more confusing?
Yes.
So let's do that.
Please.
So now all of a sudden, we're at this really great housing development in the desert. Yes. With, wait for it, a third Cooper.
What?
No, you heard me right, Amy. There's now three Coopers running around.
OMG.
And this one's called Dougie. Don't call him Doug. It's Dougie.
Oh, yeah, it is. Part of our drinking game that we'll have to put together soon is anytime somebody says Dougie, we've got a drink.
I'm totally fine with this.
Because they say it a lot.
They do. And it's like almost funny every time, too.
Pretty much. Also, Sunny Jim, but we'll get to him.
Oh my God, Sunny Jim, what a great name.
I know.
So he is the schlubbiest Cooper we've seen yet. He's not Wayne Newton, snakeskin leather Cooper. He's not our beloved agent Cooper. Schlubby is exactly it. He has this hilarious wig on, though.
Yeah, it's great. It's almost like as bad as the wig that Big Ed wore when they went to when I checked.
Oh my God, that wig. Maybe it's the same wig, it's just slightly restyled. Maybe they straightened it or something.
Yeah, the curly mullet wig.
And he's got, obviously, a really, he's kind of like stuck in the 70s. It's almost like that creepy 70s porn man hair and his like wide lapel clothes. And anyway, so he's just finished up with a prostitute. And, you know, he's getting dressed, but he says his arm it hurts. It's kind of tingly. It's like, oh, I think I fell asleep. Obviously, that's something, these Coopers are all connected, is totally what I kind of got from that, right?
Yes, I agree.
So he pays up a lot.
Seems that way, unless they were ones.
True. But she looks more expensive than that.
She does look quite expensive, and they, it's not like they're in a car.
No, they're in a house that they clearly broke into.
Yeah, something that's up for sale.
Yeah, somehow they've got some sort of a real estate connection in all of this who gives them the keys, probably for, you know, a little money on the side. I don't know.
Could be. Or maybe Jade.
That's prostitute.
Prostitute Jade, maybe she has a second career as a real estate agent.
That's what Scott said. He's like, is she a prostitute and a real estate agent? I was like, I don't think so, but maybe.
A lot of people have to take a second job in this harsh economic climate.
Yeah, we call that a side hustle.
There you go. Side hustle.
So Dougie is, you know, kind of putting himself together. She goes to take a shower, and it's almost as if Dougie is having, like, a heart attack. Like, something's wrong with him. Something's coming over him.
Right, because his arm goes numb, and you think about that as, like,
a
heart attack.
Heart attack. And then he barfs, like, some of the grossest barf.
It looked real weird. They never zoom in on it, but it looks funny.
It looks almost like the entire, like, contents of his stomach is compacted and just kind of, like, plops out.
Something.
And then he's sucked into the lodge with this crazy loud sound that even Jade hears from the shower, but she doesn't know what it was.
Yeah, it's crazy. We haven't heard it make that noise yet.
No.
And he also didn't seem to be sucked via electricity like everybody else.
No, I can't quite explain how he went.
Just like popped out.
He just popped out. So, you know, you want to hear some more about puke, don't you?
Oh, yeah, always.
Okay, good.
This is a puke-heavy episode, man.
It is a puke-heavy episode, and it is so gross because, like, there's something about Kyle MacLachlan can make those puke sounds, like, and, like, those about to, like, heave moments that's like, oh, no. It just makes you want to throw up.
Sympathy gags.
Sympathy gags, and I don't usually get that, but I was kind of, like, I was starting to turn a little green. And so Evil Coop barfs up like tons of yellow gack. Like, I mean,
it was such a tube next to his face moment.
Yes.
I loved how over the top it was. I was not expecting that.
No. And it's just, it's coming out. And it's not quick. I mean, it's like not quick. I mean, it's like you're on this for what feels like 3 minutes of your life.
Mm-hmm. But it seems like he might have dodged a bullet. By waiting to barf?
Mm-hmm.
Did he hold out long enough? Because Dougie seems to have been taken into the lodge in his place. He sits up a little bit after barfing, and he sees in the kind of lodge that's superimposing itself over the desert that Dougie is sitting in the chair.
Mm-hmm.
The chair we usually see in there. And then the whole scene disappears, so it seems like he's safe.
I kind of have a little bit of a theory about this.
Please tell me.
Okay. And this is when I watched it through the second time, too, that I really started to think about this. Is, mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, we want good Coop to switch with evil Wayne Newton Coop.
Sure.
But if he had gone through that cigarette lighter, I feel like he would have died. Because how could they both survive that car crash then? Because he would have been coming, like, out of the dashboard?
That's true.
And I don't know. And, I mean, I know it seems like, and it probably is, that he should have switched with Evil Coop right then. But I don't know. I'm almost like, did that save him by switching with Dougie?
So do you think that was something that someone arranged to help him and not hurt him?
Well, okay, I know I just said Jesus take the wheel, but allow me to go a little further.
Please do.
Yes. So the one-armed man is there in the lodge with him, right?
With Dougie.
Yeah, with Dougie. Okay. I'm sorry, with Dougie. There's so many Coops. Let's get this. Let's keep this straight.
Yes, with Dougie. Schlubby, Schlubby Coop.
Schlubby Dougie. And he's very confused as to where he is and what he's doing there.
Like you would be.
Yeah, and our good old friend, the one-armed man, says, of course, in, you know, backwards subtitle speak, mm-hmm. Somebody manufactured you for a purpose, and I think now that has been fulfilled. Now, okay, so here's where I get some more of my theories, is I think Dougie was made maybe by Evil Coop so that Evil Coop could switch places with that Dougie if he had to. I mean, I don't know how Evil Coop does that.
I agree. I think that Evil Coop created Dougie somehow.
Yeah. Poor Dougie, because he obviously thinks he's like a real person and everything. And to some extent, he's been living like a real life. Like we find out later in the episode that he's like a real person with like a wife and a kid and everything.
Yeah, he didn't just pop into existence as far as we can tell. I mean, he has to have been there for at least, 5 years or so, 10 years.
Right. Yeah, maybe
living
not
a life.
Yeah, exactly. Because long enough to like kind of establish himself in the world. He has a job and a family and everything.
Yeah, and he's going to see Jade.
He's going to see Jade. And he obviously owes people some money, which we'll get to as well.
That's right.
So this reminds me of in Beetlejuice, you know, at the end with the little like witch doctor guy.
Yeah.
Because then Dougie basically begins to shrink into his suit, kind of disappearing. Yeah. And okay, I am going to let you take over because I cannot even tell you how to describe what happens to him.
This is tough. This was tough for me to describe too when I was writing it down. He has a green ring on his finger, which is probably going to be important.
Yeah, note the green ring.
Please do. And as he shrinks, it slips off and falls on the ground. And then, instead of completely shrinking out of, you know, out of existence, his head disappears and it makes another pop. And there's black fire, which we've seen already, you know, in the new episodes. And within the black fire is what looks like a golden snitch. But without the wings.
No wings. It's an unwinged snitch.
Yeah. Same size and everything. And then the rest of his body kind of shrinks and just collapses on itself, and he becomes this round thing that looks like a rock, and it looks a little bit like the evolution of the arm's head, which you might remember if you've been keeping up.
Mm-hmm. Sure does.
Which then, as it would, of course, it kind of gives birth to or spits out a smaller rock, which, keeping with the logical progression of things, merges with the snitch to create a very tiny little golden ball bearing,
mm-hmm.
which plops down on the couch, which is now empty. So the one-armed man comes over. He takes the golden ball bearing, and he takes the green ring. And he keeps the ball bearing, but he puts the ring on a little table. Interesting. So it seems that Dougie, whatever made him, this golden snitch and whatever is done. He's run his course. So
yeah, and it's I mean, it's wonderful. The whole sequence is wonderful, but it is so bizarre.
Yeah, and it's great to see Kyle MacLachlan just playing all these different parts and loving it, because he's clearly having a lot of fun.
It's
so much
yeah.
fun to watch him.
It's a testament to him as an actor, because he is a really good actor.
He is. I was really sad when I was talking to a couple of friends last weekend, because they were telling me that all they can see when they see Kyle MacLachlan is his character from Showgirls.
What?
They don't associate him with Agent Cooper. They associate him with that sleazy dude in Showgirls.
No.
Which makes me so sad.
Friends, why?
Well, they didn't watch Twin Peaks, so I guess that's the most memorable thing, you know.
Yeah.
Besides Sex and the City.
Yeah, which I liked him on Sex and the City. He had a kind of a funny character where he had a reptile dysfunction.
Yeah.
That's
good times.
That's the technical term for that, a reptile dysfunction.
Mm-hmm. Men just call it ED now so they can keep their pride intact.
Well, see, I just like it to be like it's a reptile, and the reptile can't function. It's funny.
When you first said it, I thought you said reptile.
Oh, I did. I did.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a reptile dysfunction. Yeah, yeah. You heard me right.
I'm glad we cleared that up.
But yes.
I'll be calling it that forever now.
Please do. And no, I like him in other things too. I liked him in that. I think he's hilarious on Portlandia as the mayor.
Yeah, he's so good.
I don't know. I just like him in everything I've ever seen him in. I don't know.
But there's no time to cry over Dougie.
Yeah, no, let's get back.
We're back in that room where he just disappeared. And here comes Coop. He's back in the real world. He comes out of the outlet in that empty room and slides horizontally out and lands next to the barf on the carpet.
Oh my God, he's so close to it.
And without shoes.
Right.
And Jade comes out of the shower and she's very confused at why he looks different, cut his hair, lost weight, and got a nice suit. But she does not have time for his bullshit because she's got to get the hell out of there. Because like we said, this is a property for sale. So she's trying to get him out and he's just, Coop is not right. Probably he's been sitting for 25 years in this dream place and it's going to take him a while to get his bearings. But I mean, he couldn't put his own shoes on. He just follows her around. He can't speak either.
He's almost like catatonic. I mean, so this is what happens to you when you spend 25 years in the Black Lodge.
Sure. I mean, and how do you even... People probably sound ridiculous because they're not talking backwards.
That's exactly what I was going to say. He's probably thinking everybody, like Jade, is speaking backwards. And he's kind of like, he's kind of catching words or end of words.
Yeah, I bet you that's part of the reason why he's so confused.
Oh my God, and it made me laugh when Jade's like, what'd you do to your hair? And she's like, were you wearing a rug this whole time, Dougie?
Clearly he was.
And then he just like, I don't know, like threw it under the bed or something.
Yeah, all of a sudden.
And he's like lost a lot of weight.
Just very, very suddenly. And she doesn't notice the barf either, but whatever. She is wonderful, by the way. I hope we see more of her. I feel we probably won't, but I loved Jade.
I liked her too. I thought she was fun.
Yeah, and she feels bad for him because he's so out of it. And she's like, all right, Dougie, you mean Jade has to give you two rides? Which was great.
That's going to be used again.
Yeah, it is.
Just like in life as a joke. I like it.
She makes off with Coop in her Jeep, and unbeknownst to them, there's a very swarthy-looking dude who is watching through binoculars and keeping tabs and communicating with some other criminal who is waiting at the exit of this development and was going to shoot him, but he dropped his key to the Great Northern Hotel.
When he had that key in his pocket, I was like, oh, like it just, I don't know, that gave me a feel.
Me too, and I felt like it was going to jog his memory, but it didn't.
I know, that's kind of what I was hoping too, but it seems like we've got a while with catatonic Coop.
Yeah, but I have no complaints about that because he is a true delight.
He is. He is a delight.
This and the next episode are definitely very funny. Funnier than the first two by far.
Yes, and even with all this bizarre stuff happening, I was still laughing a lot by this point in the episode.
Me too. So he drops this key to the Great Northern Hotel, and he's kind of ducking down as they're driving out, so the guy doesn't think he's in the car. Lucky for him. Mm. And they decide they're going to get his car, which he left at the house because he couldn't find his keys. That's why she took him in the first place. And then go back to Mike's. So I don't know if he's going to be important later, but I wrote his name down. And this gets really weird. This is a strange aside. I wonder what you thought about this. Swarthy guy, number one, he puts something under Coop's car.
Yeah.
Or, I'm sorry, Dougie's car.
Yeah. Yes.
And I don't know if it's a tracker or it's a bomb or what. It just has a light and it sticks on the bottom of his car. And we see this through the or from the point of view of this kid who lives across the street and is watching out his window. And then we go inside of his house, and he does not seem to have a very nice home life.
No.
His mama is, or the lady in there with him looks like she's been doing a lot of drugs.
Yeah.
And she has a bottle of, looks like Jack Daniels in front of her, some what looks like remnants of crushed up pills and a pill bottle. And she's keeps yelling 119 over and over again. And she takes a drink and she very precisely sets a pill down in front of her and takes the pill and lights a cigarette and stuff. But she keeps saying 119. And the kid is just sitting on the couch, and he seems to be used to this kind of behavior, and he's fending for himself, eating cereal out of this box that he looks like he tore open himself. Mm. So that was strange.
Super strange. And to be honest with you, well, first of all, the minute I kind of saw that part, I immediately Googled, what does a safety pin have to do with drug use? Because I didn't know how that played in.
A safety pin?
There's safety pins on the table.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, and I was like, what do safety pins have to do with drug use? Google it. It's a thing. Anyway, I do not know what to make of this sequence either, except for the fact that the boy probably witnessed the whole thing.
Meaning, do you think he knows that something just happened and somebody popped out of existence and somebody came in?
It's possible he saw that. I mean, it's possible that he just saw Catatonic Coop and Jade leaving and, you know, then the guy putting the thing on the bottom of the car while he's, like, talking, you know, obviously to somebody in a remote location. Or maybe he did see the Dougie Coop switch take place. I don't know what that looked like to, like, the outside of the house or if you saw anything. But that's right. That's all I could get from it. Do you have any theories?
I was thinking about how she said 119 a lot, which would be 911 backwards. I mean, it's not phonetically backwards.
Yeah.
But I thought, had she been in the lodge? Does she know about that? Is she somehow used to that kind of thing, the backwards talk? But I don't know. I imagine no, and it's just another number for us to keep track of, because she would have said it phonetically, and she's not. So hearing what you think, I think that's probably right. It's probably just, you know, the kid witnessed all of this. Because maybe, it's not like he's not done this before. I'm thinking of, like, the part in Mulholland Drive where the janitor witnesses the guy shoot that lady. It's not really an important scene to the movie exactly, and it doesn't go anywhere else except that he shoots that guy for seeing it, but witnessing things on accident seems to be a thing for Lynch, so maybe that's part of it.
Right. Or, you know, it could be a red herring as well. Who knows?
Yeah, it could be. I thought maybe it would just be another peek into something that on the surface looks okay but is really awful underneath. You know, you see inside of this house and it's just another version of that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I felt bad for the kid, though. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It made me sad. Go on.
That was very bleak. But meanwhile, Jade's driving. She's trying to talk Coop into, she's like, okay, I want you to, you know, go and call for help. and you can get somebody to help you get into your car. Now, why she thinks that that's going to be the solution to all his problems is kind of beyond me. She's obviously got a lot of stuff going on.
She just can't get tangled up in all this. I mean, she's going to end up in jail otherwise.
That's true. That's true. She's just being very considerate.
Yes.
So the town car still crashed on the side of that windy road, and these police come to check it out, and the one that gets closest to the car first, it complains about a smell, and he just starts getting real sick. And so they know that something is maybe wrong, like infectious disease-wise there.
Right.
But we're just there for a quick second, and then we're back at the Twin Peaks Sheriff Station. And I loved the sign that Hawk hangs on the door.
Oh my gosh.
It says disturb, and there's a picture of donuts.
Donut disturb.
I would love to work there.
Samesies.
God. So they've got all the evidence from the case laid out, and there's a wonderful discussion between
Andy and Lucy and Hawk.
He's trying to figure out what's missing.
Right.
And Lucy's very worried because she remembers that she ate a chocolate bunny, which was apparently part of their evidence collection.
How could she? But she only did it once.
And it was years and years ago, of course. And she admits tearfully that it was because she had a gas bubble and she thought chocolate got rid of it. And we have so many great lines, like,
right?
Do chocolate bunnies have anything to do with your heritage?
Right, because remember, that's one of the clues that Margaret, the log lady, gave, is that it has something to do with Hawk's heritage.
Right. And we, Hawk gets kind of upset, and he's like, it's not about the bunny. And then he says, is it about the bunny? The whole scene was pure gold. We don't really learn anything, but it was pure gold.
No, exactly. And Andy's doing his Andy thing, and he said, do you want me to get you a chocolate bunny, Punky? Like, that's going to help anything in this moment, is to get her another chocolate bunny.
He tries, bless him.
Oh, my God. They are just, the three of them are just so good. The way they all play off each other, it's just so beautiful.
Yes. Yes, it is. Meanwhile, yes. Another scene that has no explanation and doesn't seem to have anything to do with anything.
Yeah.
Back to Jacoby's trailer. He has this great contraption that he's rigged up for spray painting his shovels gold.
I loved that. Yeah.
He's got guitar pedals controlling it. They rotate. They move down a line. He's really keeping himself occupied in his retirement, I think.
Right? And I mean, because we still don't know what he's doing with all these shovels, except for that he's painting them gold. And this whole contraption is so huge, and it's like, it's guitar pedals, it's like a bicycle wheel. I mean, he's obviously spent time into how to get this technique down to paint shovels gold. And, you know, is this like, does he now manufacture like gold shovels for like groundbreaking ceremonies?
Ooh, that's a good idea. He has an Etsy store.
He has an Etsy store, and he sells little golden shovels.
Yeah. We don't know why.
So random. And that's, you know, that's kind of all we get out of that. And it's really funny, and paints them front to back, and then hangs them up to dry.
Yeah. He's got a process.
Yeah.
And finally, Jade drops Dougie off, or tries to anyway, at the Fabulous Silver Mustang Casino. And she gives him $5 and tells him to call for help. And she's like, I think you might have had a little stroke. Something. And imagine, if you will, somebody who is obviously kind of in shock and trying to learn how to get around and get by in the real world, wandering into a casino, the loudest, brightest, most distracting place in the world.
They're kind of weird, surreal environments unto themselves.
Exactly. But I suppose after all he's seen in the past 25 years, it would take a lot to phase him.
Yeah.
So he kind of wanders in, and he's holding this $5 out, and he's just saying, call for help. Call for help. And they don't know what to do with him. They point him to get change.
He has this little shuffling walk he does, too. And just, he's really tense. He's like holding his shoulders, his jaw, everything. It's just, he's so uncomfortable, and it's hilarious. His physicality is brilliant.
Yeah, and I honestly hope that he doesn't snap out of this for a while, because I'm loving the shit out of it.
That's so good.
He goes and gets change, and I thought this was weird. Did you recognize Meg Foster?
I sure did, and I love her.
Yeah, it was crazy. Only for a second. She's just the lady who gives him change.
She seems a little concerned for him.
She does, which was good.
I love her, so I was like, oh my god, hi Meg.
Yeah, it's funny. I guess a lot of people just want to be in it. They don't really care what they do. They just want to be in it. I don't blame them.
There's a couple of people from The Walking Dead who have little parts in these seasons too, like kind of like just a couple lines here and there. And
yeah,
I think
cool.
And I think that's part of it. It's just people were excited about this. Maybe they're fans, they're friends of David Lynch, and he's like, let me just get you in here for a minute.
Heck yeah. Who wouldn't want to come back?
There are these wonderful Easter eggs of humans.
Yeah, I like that. Human Easter eggs.
Yeah.
So Coop's kind of walking around. He doesn't really know what to do now, but he's got this cup full of quarters. And he sees somebody playing a slot machine, and they go, hello! And when they win.
I'm cracking up. It's so good.
And he sees, like, a little image of the Black Lodge floating above a slot machine. So he goes and imitates the man right down to the hello, and he wins.
Well, yes.
And then he does it over and over and over again.
Absolutely. And he's not only imitating the man, but because clearly he's trying to call for help. So he thinks, oh, okay, that's what this guy was doing too. You say, it's like making a call, like putting a quarter in a payphone and like,
oh,
hello.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Because he saw
I'm
the man
dumb.
Do it, and that's
I didn't
what he
think of it.
Well, yeah, no, it's bold because he saw the man do it, and he's like, yes, because I'm calling for help. So let me call for help how this person does.
Oh, shit.
It's hilarious, right?
Yes.
And, again, he, every machine he goes to, well, he sees that little miragey kind of flame of the Black Lodge pattern, and he, which is really bizarre. And
sure
he goes
is.
He goes over to that machine, puts in his quarter, and does his little hello, and wins the jackpot every time. Mr. Jackpots, as he's soon to be called in this casino.
This lady is really shabby looking. Her hair is nuts, and she's dirty, and she's got this little old fleece on, and she's watching him. She notices, and she starts calling him Mr. Jackpots.
Pots, but, plural. It's so good.
Yeah, but she doesn't want to leave her machine for a while. Because she thinks it's going to pay out, even though she watches this guy.
This machine is hot, she thinks.
Yeah. And somebody from the casino finally approaches him. I figured people all around would be just running to get those coins, but I guess they're very polite there.
Well, as the little lady shows us, the little shabby lady, she looks like she's going to grab them, but then she looks up at the camera and, like, flips it off because, I mean, I'm sure, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So if you try to do that, you're going to get thrown out of the Silver Mustang Casino.
And the shabby lady knows.
Yeah, she's probably done it once.
Most likely.
She was on a 6-month ban.
They have her picture up in the back.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And then a person from the casino approaches him, and he says, call for help. And she's like, oh, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. Let me get you a bigger bucket. Because he just has, like, a little cup to put his winnings in. There's just something so adorable about this Coop as well. Like, it's just, he's precious. I can't describe it.
He's very childlike.
Yes, exactly. So Mr. Jackpots is still winning, but we're going to cut away for a minute. And where do we go? The FBI headquarters.
Oh, shit.
And we've got friends.
Oh, Albert.
And Cole.
How so cool is it to see them?
It's wonderful. I mean, not only do I adore Albert, but I really like Miguel Ferrer and so many things he's done. And of course, we just lost him earlier this year as well. He passed away. So this was one of those, not to totally digress, but I mean, it kind of made me a little verklempt because I do like him so much as an actor that it was a little, you know, hard to see him. And then the other one, of course, that's gotten to me in these episodes is they talk about Philip Jeffries, which is,
What are they going to do about that?
I don't know, because, I mean, most people who know me in life know that David Bowie was my first love. I'm absolutely obsessed with David Bowie, and his passing was very tough for me, for this little monster. And so it's like hearing, and, you know, and then just other people we've lost, like Margaret and stuff, too. It's like, it's kind of bizarre to see these people.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of surreal to see them alive.
Or hear them referenced when you know who that character is supposed to be.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, it's true. And I heard that before he died, David Bowie was interested in coming back. So he was. They planned to have him on the show.
That just wrenches my heart.
It probably makes it worse for you. I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's okay. Because you know what? We have lots of memories. And like, as far as Albert's concerned, we have him in this episode. And I mean, I think he did a lot of filming. I'm not sure when they filmed this, but don't you get that impression? Like, we're going to see more of him too?
Absolutely. I don't think this is like a little cameo, like some of the other roles I've seen.
Yeah.
So far.
So let's talk about Albert and Cole, because we're so happy to see them. And then, of course, Amy, who is Cole, but
Mr. David Lynch himself.
Yes. And he's still so funny because he still can't hear a damn thing.
Mm-mm, still yelling. Still got his really old looking, old school hearing aid.
So we're at the FBI headquarters with the gang, and Albert's bringing the group up to date. They're talking about a guy who's accused of murdering his wife. He says he's innocent, but it would breach national security to reveal the real killer. Could this be the same principle we've been following the Matthew Lillard character?
Yeah, Bill Hastings has a problem of national security.
How is that possible?
I mean, we assume that's who they're talking about, but they don't say for sure.
They don't really, but clearly that's got to come back around.
I would imagine
so. Yeah, because we're not done with that subplot.
Mm-mm.
So the suspect buried clues in his garden to help lead them to his identity. And there's some pics of women in bikinis. There's some pliers. There's a photo of a little boy in a sailor outfit at the beach. A gun with a silencer. And a jar of dry white beans. You know, like this kind you use to count things when you're learning to count in school.
Why? What does it mean?
I mean, I hope they have some hilariously brilliant way of coming all together to reveal this killer's identity, but it's just so good. It's just hilarious as they're panning over to each of these unrelated seeming items.
Don't forget the beans.
And yeah, don't forget. Just like the perfect little period on the end of the sentence. And Cole says, the congressman's dilemma.
So what does that mean?
Oh, I'm sorry. I figure it's like some sort, I don't know. I thought it was like maybe some sort of FBI jargon, like, you know, like, lingo speak, like, you know, how they call certain cases or, I don't know.
Like the blue rose?
Like, yeah, exactly. It's a congressman's dilemma, everybody. I don't know. I just love
like
the way he says
22.
It.
Like a catch-22.
Yes.
I thought he was being specific, and maybe there's somebody higher up involved in this, but
yeah, you could be right.
Know.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of brilliant to not know.
It is. Out of character for Cole to say something that doesn't make a whole lot of sense in context.
Non sequitur sort of thing. Yeah.
Right.
And we meet a new character here, Agent Tammy. So
femme fatale looking broad.
She is, yeah. And she shows them some photos of what's left of Sam and Tracy. Remember back to Sam and Tracy watching the glass box, and then they got all basically shredded to rivets?
Yeah, they did.
Ribbons, not rivets. Those are other things.
They were a mess. They could have been rivets. Who knows?
They looked bad. No prints. There's no fibers. There's nothing. Like, you know, kind of connecting this stuff. So, I mean, clearly this is, she talks about how, you know, the setup of the place and the fact that there was always security, but nobody knows who owns the building. Like, NYPD is still trying to even, like, sluss that out.
Interesting.
Yeah. So excited
I like the fact that they are investigating the same stuff we are, because that means that we're going to learn some more stuff.
Yeah, it's cool. We're all kind of still, and we actually know a little bit more than they do.
Yes.
Yeah. So, who knows? More mystery to unravel then. And an urgent call comes in, letting Cole know that Coop's on the phone.
What? Which is misleading.
It is misleading.
Because he wasn't.
No, it's, it's, well, Cooper has been found. Well, so they think. But who did they find? I mean, they found evil Cooper. Yeah, after that car crash and the phenomenal yellow puke.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, Albert, we're going to the Black Hills of South Dakota.
And Albert's all upset about it. And they show him with this giant wall-sized mural print of an atomic bomb, which was great. Because he's happy about it.
No, it's just, and then the red phone sitting right there, too. It's just so like, we're the government, and this is what we have for decor.
Yep.
It's wonderful. That gave me a big laugh.
So that's where they're headed, which is very exciting.
Yes, and we get another one of those awesome end credit bands playing at the Bang Bang Bar. It's the Cactus Blossoms.
Yes, and I hadn't heard of them before, and I Shazammed them while I was listening, or while I was watching, and I listened to their album. They're quite good.
I dig them. Like, when I don't know, I like these kind of weird alternative sort of bands that they're playing at the ends of these episodes. I don't know. They're just kind of that awesome, bizarre, kind of haunting music.
Yeah, with like a kind of old but timeless quality.
Oh, that's very well said, Amy.
Thank you. Yes, I liked their sound. I thought this one especially fit real nicely.
Yeah.
And that's the end.
Yeah, the game is afoot. Yeah, we're off.
Yeah, and we've got a lot to look forward to in this next episode. They've set a lot up, and Coop's finally back in the world.
He's back. He is back on our side of reality.
And it's only a matter of time before he gets his wits about him.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we take a little break, give you a chance to recoup. Go get your refills, do what you need to do, and we will be back to discuss part 4 in just a minute.
Yay!
Every hour, a podcast is hurt by lack of reviews. They suffer alone, terrified, unreviewed, waiting for help. Waiting for you to help. Please say you'll be the answer to this problem. For about 1 minute of your time, you can provide joy, peace of mind, and the knowledge that others will hear this show. This is your chance to not sit by while the bloodlust suffers unreviewed. So go to iTunes, Stitcher, now, and make a difference for 5 sad, unreviewed horror fans. We're counting on you. Thank you.